Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Bikini in the Brain. We are here with the lovely Ashley Kaltwasser, getting leaner week by week.
Cheek test.
It's almost there. When Ashley's full prep, the cheeks are, you see the little bone there.
I go hard. From chipmunk to, what's that character, Maleficent?
Yeah, who is that? Maleficent?
Yeah, the Disney character. I'm like,
yeah. That's funny.
That's when you know it's getting serious.
Yeah, almost time. Look, you're in black. You look like me today. What's going on?
God, I feel so basic and boring.
Wednesday right now.
How does it? Yeah, I do. I'm very Wednesday.
Oh, you know what they're doing? I don't know. Maybe you're not such a movie person, so this might not be important to you. But they're remaking Beetlejuice.
Oh, no way.
Oh, so you know Beetlejuice. Okay,
yeah,
cool.
Yeah, I'd be down for that.
Okay, it's the same girl who played Wednesday, I think, is playing the Beetlejuice girl. Yeah. Or you, apparently.
Yeah.
So we are going into some of the questions you guys asked today.
Yeah. So we rounded up some of your questions on the IG. We just tossed it out there. We're like, hey, guys, we're doing a podcast. We need your help. Ask us anything you want to know. So we picked some of the good ones. We picked some good questions to answer here today. But we appreciate your involvement in helping us with these episodes. I think these ones are quite popular because I don't know. You guys want to know these things. So, you know, our job is to give you that information. So hopefully you enjoy this one just as much as the others.
Yeah. So we're going to go ahead and kick it off. Lori Alexander, thank you for your question on Instagram. And it says, Ashley, do you ever felt any burnout? You ever feel any burnout, I imagine?
Yes, I do. Believe it or not. Yes, I do. I think most of the time the burnout comes from like traveling too much. Like, unlike Adam, I do need days where I just do nothing. Like, I need, like, I call them do nothing days, like, where I just stay at home in my pajamas, looking ugly, not caring what I, you know, just doing nothing, not caring what I look like, just relaxing. So I do get that sometimes, but I will say it's not necessarily competition related. It's more of travel, because I can get burnt out with travel easy. I'm just like, I just want to be home this weekend, you know? So yeah. How about you? What's your experience with that?
Burnout for me is just travel. But the only time I get really burnt out is when I accumulate East Coast travels or time zone travels.
Yeah. Those make it so much worse.
Yeah. I get tired at shows no matter what. So this weekend was so crazy with the show. I was like, oh, it's California. It's San Diego. So it's like the farthest part of California, 5-hour drive. And I was like, I'll drive. 4 hours is like my limit or I'm flying. But I was like, well, my mom's out there, so I'll go to California. I'll stop by family shop, show Kimber the family tortilla shop and tour around. We didn't do that actually. And then we drove, crazy thing. So San Diego, perfect weather all the time. Storming, crazy storming in San Diego, like rain everywhere. And they have it set up in San Diego where there's a tent that's outside of the hotel. So all the girls had to walk with their tan through the rain. Oh. Yeah. So we're like trying to find umbrellas. And like, so we found an umbrella, whatever, we got it. And then Tamer, who ran the show, he was super cool about it. He goes, hey, I know that it's not ideal weather. So what we're going to do, we're just going to run the show front to back.
Oh, I love those. Oh,
so nice. So nice.
I wish all shows were just like that. Like, I hate the gap between pre-judging finals. It's like you have to sit there, wait, and overthink everything. Like, just get it over.
Yeah. He's like, so I don't want you girls to have to worry about their hair, their tan, all that. So we're going to do the show. Starts at 11 sharp, which is always what it's going to start. And then we're just going to follow it up with quick break, 15 minutes, 20 minutes, whatever. And we're going to go right into finals. So, we're out of there. Show was done by like 1, right? We're done. I was like, let's just drive back.
Oh, that's beautiful. Good thing you drove and not flew.
Yeah. So that was the one benefit of driving, right? So we're driving back. And Baker, the exit on Baker on the 5, we're almost back because Baker's like an hour from the house. Baker had a 4.5-hour delay. If we sat on Baker, something happened. So we took these back roads. Oh. So it ended up making it like a 7.5-hour drive, these back roads to get home. And I was exhausted. So it did burn me out a little bit. And I slept for 12 hours yesterday.
Wow, that's great.
Me and the doc slept for 12 hours yesterday. Wow. It was crazy. So I feel great now. That's like your sleep. You dream of sleep like that.
Oh, yeah. If I could sleep that much, that'd be great.
So point is that those things will add up to me. And then I'll get, like, if I did 2 of them in a row, then I would be burnt out. But if it was a quick 4-hour drive, I don't get burnt out. So the time zone is what gets me more than anything.
Oh yeah. East Coast is rough. I say this, it's for whatever reason, going to the East Coast, that is like the worst jet lag. Even when I went to Hawaii and Japan, which is to the left of us, not to the right of us, I didn't experience jet lag like I do in like going to like Pittsburgh or something. It's, it's hard. It's hard on your body.
For some reason too, the flights seem to really suck going to the East Coast. Like I always find these flights that are, cause I'm like you, I don't sleep on a plane unless it's overseas and it's like a 12-hour flight. I can sleep on those, which sucks because you can't even sleep on those very good. But on the ones to the East Coast, there's always like leave at 8, get there at 6 a.m., get there at 5 a.m., like there's always this weird overnight thing. And then you get there and it's 6, 7 a.m., so you're not going to sleep. You know, you can't check into your hotel. So you're like, you have to be up. So you end up being up for like 40 hours and then you're screwed for like a week or two after that. Right. You can't catch up. So as long as it's not that, which I always say East Coast is the is like the best because to go to. I love going to the East Coast, but I hate actually going to the East Coast. You know, I love being at the East Coast, but I hate going to the East Coast. So
I don't believe that.
Yes. So
I don't believe you like being there.
Yeah, you know, I love, okay, I should say I love
Adam,
Florida.
Stop lying.
I love Florida. Okay. I'll say that. I love Florida.
Okay, Florida. There you go. Because yeah. I was like, yeah, I love, after that rain, you knew.
Yeah, I should say I love Florida. Florida's dope. That's I don't know if I'll be one of these old guys that retire in Florida, but it's because I love Vegas too much. But maybe one day I'll get burnt out of Vegas and I'm going to be a Florida guy. So that's my next, that's like the next spot. There are, Texas is cool too. So, okay. Next question, which is similar to the last one. Linnea Carlson from Instagram says, do you ever feel like the sport overtakes your life and you forget who you are without it? That's a pretty good question. It's deep.
That's a really deep question. Yeah. And you know something? It does. But I've learned to kind of accept it because here's the thing. From the time I can remember, I've always been this way. I will latch onto something and be obsessed with it. And just that is it. Like in high school, it was track. I was so obsessed with track. School was like, whatever. I'm looking forward to the track meet this weekend. That's all I could think about. And, you know, I was sitting here, you know, thinking about how that question's worded. And I think a lot of people wouldn't expect me to say yes, because it's kind of, I don't know, some people can find that to be a little bit shameful. But at the same time, I'm like, if you want to be great, that's kind of how it has to be,
yeah.
You know, something. And I realize it's not for everyone and not everyone can take it as seriously and be so immersed with it as me. I get that, but I am, and I'm not afraid to say it. Okay. I love it. It brings me so much happiness and joy. And I think if everything in my life is going good right now, then there's no downside to that right now. Now that might change, of course, but in my place in life right now, I'm good. Like all my needs are taken care of emotionally, physically, everything like that. I'm happy. But yeah, I can definitely get so laser focused that I'm so like obsessed with it. And you know, like I said, it could change later in life, but for now in this moment, yes. It has overtaken me a bit and I'm okay with it.
Yeah.
How about you?
You know what? I'm definitely in the same boat as you. It's funny that we have similarities on that. We have a lot of those similarities because in life I was always like that too.
Yeah. Right. And it's like one thing you just laser focus on it.
Yeah. All my friends, when I started like doing this at a higher level, everyone was like, yeah, no one's surprised that you ended up doing that. Cause all you always did fitness since you were a little kid. You were always super focused on one thing. No one was really ever like, they're always like, we're all friends with you, but no one was really ever friends with you. Like we never like got to see you.
Yeah.
We'd see you at school. You'd say hi, but it's not like you were out partying with us. You're hanging out with us. Like all you did was play hockey. All you did was work out. And I was like, yeah, but I don't remember a time where I wasn't happy.
Yeah.
Doing it.
Like, I feel like a lot of people would expect us to be like, no, it hasn't overtaken a lot more lives. And almost like it's a negative thing if it kind of does. But I'm here to say it's one of those kind of like when people shame me for being obsessed.
Yeah.
You know, if you want to be great, it's kind of what you got to do.
Yeah. For me, it goes past, I think the thing is for both of us, probably it goes past the point of an obsession to the point of the reason to wake up in the morning.
Yeah.
And I think when it becomes that, the effort, like, I think people look at it because they're not in the same position. And so they look at it as, oh, it takes effort to be at that level, like effort. But to me, I don't want to speak for you, but I feel like for you too, it's not that it takes effort. It's like, we don't know how to live our life any other way. It's like just how we live our life.
I'm afraid of being mediocre. That's the thing.
Yeah.
Like I said, one of my biggest fears is mediocrity, being mediocre, just being average. I don't ever want to be average in anything. So whatever I latch onto, whether it be track in grade school, I never wanted to be average. now it's bikini. And then in later in life, who knows what it'll be, but I never want to be average at it. So whatever I latch onto, I'm like, I'll be darned if I'm just average. I want to be great.
Give your best effort, no matter what it is. You
absolutely.
Know? And that's how you be great at anything, you know, and this is no different. And for me, I compete now like through athletes, but I'm still competing against other coaches. And that gives me my accomplishment, my, and I want to, you know, I want to destroy. I want to go out there and just crush every weekend. Like I want to just be the best, you know? And so, and it makes me feel really, really good. And it is obsessive, and there's no doubt it's caused problems in my life. No doubt about it, but I think me being lazy would cause just as many problems.
Right.
You know? I think it's probably more, but probably in my personal life, like girl life or whatever, but I just had to find the right girls all at once.
Yes,
you know?
And you did.
Yeah.
So Kimber. Problem taken care of.
She's super supportive. She gets it. She understands how hard it is when it gets to the stressful shows, you know, the big shows. Like she understands like he's going to probably be a little bit more on edge. And just like I am, I'm more supportive and more understanding when she's like prepping for shows. Like, okay, she's going to be she might be a little ornery here and there. Like just don't poke the bear. Like just sometimes I'll poke the bear and I'm like, damn, why did I poke? I knew I was going to happen. Like this wouldn't end the way in any way besides this, right? Why would I poke the bear? You know, type of thing. So you got to pick your spots. And we both do. We understand that. So yeah, I think with anything in life, if you're going to give you want to be great at it, you got to give your all.
Yeah.
It does have to consume you, but at a certain point, it becomes the reason you wake up in the morning and it brings you a ton of joy. It goes past the point of effort. So,
yeah. Yeah. It's funny though, that we're both like this kind of happened just even when we were children, because like, even like I mentioned in grade school and high school, even like I didn't care about being popular. I don't care if I eat lunch alone. That's fine. I don't care to have so many friends. I just need a few and the thing I'm passionate about and I'm good. So like I said, in school, it was track. I was the same way. I didn't care about being popular. You know how a lot of people were, all the girls want to be homecoming queen or something. I wanted to be voted most athletic in high school.
Nice.
That was like my goal. That was like my version of homecoming queen. And I did get voted that. So yes.
Mission, did you really?
Yeah, of course.
Nice.
Yeah.
I won two things too. They had to revote.
Oh yeah.
It wasn't anything athletic though.
Oh man, really?
Oh yeah. I won.
Most likely to succeed.
I was nominated for four things, which was cool. And okay. I won two of them, which was, it's kind of stupid ones, but biggest flirt and cutest smile. Ah! Right. That wasn't a huge plethora of people to pick from.
Well, maybe it helps you these days. Who knows?
You know, hey, the smile got me Kimber. Hey,
there you go.
There it is. Probably being flirtatious what did too. All right. So next question. Any advice on successful dieting? I'm constantly thinking about food. All I want to do is eat regular food. Okay. I think the problem is that we're associating regular food as not, you know, what regular food should be.
Yeah.
Regular food is, you know, chicken, fish, vegetables, a healthy carb, a healthy fat. That is actually regular food. But what you're not getting is you're not getting a dopamine rush from eating foods that are not regular, that are not saying, that are satiating your taste buds with tons of fats and sugars and things. And you feel like you're depriving yourself of eating those foods. In reality, those foods should have always been a luxury, not in the regular food department. So because you're not getting this feedback of this huge rush of great taste and all these different things that we shouldn't be having in that amount anyway, we're thinking that we're sacrificing, but in reality, that should be a rare luxury. But we've all been trained, because everything's so accessible these days, to have high sodium, high fats, high sugars to give us that dopamine rush. And now we think we're sacrificing by not eating those foods. But in reality, the regular food is what we've been trained to eat. Our genetic programming and your ancestors who have gotten you here for thousands of years. But now we think, oh, because I'm not eating donuts, I'm not eating pizza, I'm not eating these things, now I'm not eating like a regular person. But that's an irregular diet, not a regular diet. So I think that that's where the shift has to start. And unfortunately, it is going to be a shift for you to start that way. But you also need to understand there's a lot of luxury, and like Ashley talks about these days, with, if you want to call regular foods, like with the chickens and things like that, like you have a ton of tricks that you use.
Oh yeah. In 2024, there is no reason to go with like full sugar anything. You know, there is, for most foods, there is a healthier option, a substitution. Foods have come a long way. You know, I remember my first protein bar, tasting it, and I'm like, oh, Oh my God. Yeah. Oh my God. This is, how do people eat this? Even like the protein shakes back then, I remember having to like plug my nose and just chug it. Now protein shakes, protein bars taste so good. You get protein bars that taste like chocolate bars. You get protein shakes that taste like milkshakes. There's stevia, there's sweeteners, there's sugar-free syrups. There's so many cool things out there that can kind of, even this, look at this, the best substitution, this A&W diet root beer.
That's my favorite.
That is my favorite drink ever. A&W diet. It tastes just like the real thing. But there's so many healthier options out there. I'm telling you, the only thing is, if we're being honest, it's a little more expensive buying the healthier things. You know, cause for example, you buy 2 pounds of sugar for like $3. I don't know how much is sugar these days. I never buy it versus like maybe stevia is 10 times as much or whatever the case may be. But just know that it's kind of like a little bit of a learning curve and you kind of have to retrain your taste buds. Cause I'm not going to lie. Stevia does taste different from sugar. It does. Okay. But once you have it enough, you don't really notice the bitterness. So I wasn't always someone that didn't crave foods or anything. Right now, as you guys know, I'm not really a foodie. That doesn't mean I don't like food. I like food, but I don't obsess over it like a lot of people do, especially in our industry. But I don't really get hungry that often. Cravings are very rare, you know? So it didn't used to be like that. I used to be obsessed just like she did, craving not even regular food. Let's call it junk food. Junk food, okay? Let's be honest.
Yeah, that's
junk
really
food.
What it is,
it's not regular food. It's junk food. So I used to crave junk food all the time. The only thing I could think about was food. And what am I going to eat after a show? And cheat meals and this and that. And once you do something for so long, it becomes a habit. So I can't explain exactly how it happened, but over time, I just didn't crave it as much. And then now I don't really crave junk food at all, really. Yeah. If I do crave something sweet, it's like, oh, I can have a healthier alternative. I'll have a Quest cookie thing, you know, low carb, high protein. But yeah, it's almost like over time, if you retrain your taste buds, it doesn't really crave the bad things anymore. So that's my advice.
Yeah. And I guess solution wise, so there we've identified the problem, but solution wise, what do we do for the time being? One of the best solutions I can give you, and this is something I do with my athletes too. I think sometimes I get kind of thought of as like a hard ass because I say how it is. And it's just like, hey, this is just how it is. This sport, unfortunately, and honestly, I think fortunately this sport, because the sport should be hard. No one should be like, when you get to the top, like your life is awesome. You know, you're rewarded for it. You're paid to go places. You're sponsored. Like, of course, if with that life being the end goal, it's going to be hard. You know, it's just, that's like all sports. You know, if I'm getting an NBA contract, getting that NBA contract is going to be super hard, require a ton of sacrifice. It's not going to be fun. I'm going to dealing with injuries. There's going to be times where I want to quit. There's going to be times where I don't think I'm good enough. And then I finally get it one day and damn, my life is awesome. I'm famous. I'm traveling. I'm rich. I'm this, right? That is the same thing, maybe at a lower level than an NBA going into IFBB, but it's a similar thing when you get to the top. Like, you're going to have sponsors paying for you to go places, seminars, you know, your shows, you're going to get your hotel paid for, things like that. Like, you're going to have a cool life. So everyone's fighting for that. Everyone wants that end prize, right? Everyone wants to be the champ. So you got to understand, because of that, you're going to have to go through some discomfort to get there. And I think sometimes because we're in health and fitness, we think, oh, it's just, I just got to be like healthy and I got to be balanced to get there. And I'm like, it's a tough sport, and it's not like it used to be either. Bikini's way harder than it used to be. Used to be able to, you know, transform into shows and lose 30 pounds to get there and no big deal. You show up, you're in pretty good shape. But now what you used to look like on stage is what you look like 6 weeks, 8 weeks before, you know, you're ready, you know? And so it's different now. It's harder now. And it is more, you're going to have more of that bodybuilder mindset, which was a do whatever it takes mindset to be good these days, because it is tougher now where you have to get to. So anyway, solution wise on that, how do we solve the problem? So what I do with my clients is I give them either a free meal per week if they're having struggles. And all I do is I'll reduce their calories a little bit per day and then add those calories up and give them a free meal per week. And some clients, when they're really struggling, I'll give them even a calorie bank throughout the week, which is something I've been doing the last year, which I really like. It's basically, instead of doing, let's say, a 1,200 calorie free meal once a week, I give them a calorie bank of 1,200 calories. So here's your calorie bank. this week you have 1,200, 1,500 calories, whatever, and you can use it however you want throughout the week. So if you're having a craving and you need a donut because you're going to have a breakdown, if you don't, take 400 calories out of your bank for that day. You got 800 calories left the rest of the day or left rest of the week, right? And you kind of take it out of those, out of that little calorie bank. You pay for it on a daily with your total calories, but at least it kind of gives you a soft outro of getting those foods, kind of like you dreaming about those foods. And then, you know, when we get close to a show, unfortunately, that bank's probably going to have to leave for most people. But then, you know, you start off at 1800 calorie bank, you go to 1200, you go to 800. And the next thing you know, you're just doing like one donut a week every now and then, and then showtime. And then you don't even crave it that much anymore. And I think one of the keys has been for me and for my athletes is when they know they can't have it, they want it way more. But when they know they can have it and it's in their calorie bank, you see the trends of them not wanting it as much anymore after they've had it every week for like a few weeks. And they're like, I can have it, but I don't really want it anymore. You know, so I don't know if there's something psychological about that.
Yeah. And I would say also maybe the reason why this person is kind of obsessing over food like this is maybe they're too going too far in their off season, which means the farther you go in your off season and the softer you get, the harder you have to diet for prep. Right. Mm. So maybe also that's one of the reasons why I don't have those horrible cravings, because I stay closer. And I don't have those big, like all or nothing, like on off. I'm living in the gray area, you know, of prep a lot. So that could be why this person is having that feeling. Cause maybe they went too crazy in the off season and now have to make up for it. And now they're just eating fish and asparagus all day. So I don't know. I'm just assuming, or
it's suffer. And you know, I talked about the other day, suffer a little now or suffer a lot later. And then the suffer a lot later now does cause more of this. And then it caused more of the rebound after, cause you've been so hard and so restricted that you really want to go after it after a show. And then you're in that same cycle again. And so that's the, you know, we preach it and we are annoying without what we talk about it, but there's a reason for it. Yeah. It is the best way. We just talked about Kimber's prep. Oh yeah. We had a show this week and Kimber got third place. I didn't even talk about that. Congratulations, Kimber. Yay. But her off, she's a tall girl on stage about 134 ish, 130, anywhere between 132, 135. And she was at highest 140. I think it was 148 was like her highest in the off season, but she made a ton of improvements. Kept about 10% off season, but her prep, she cruised into the show. She's cruised into the show. Wasn't crazy hard. Was a little bit harder the last week because we did some depletion stuff early in the week. But so that just tells you, you know, and people are like, oh, you can't make improvements. I'm like, she's clearly more improved. You're clearly more improved. We took that method. So you can. So
yeah, people just say that because they want to go crazy in the off season.
They
want
to justify eating whatever they want. Yeah. Any way they can. Yeah.
They'll still try to say it though.
I mean, all I can do is keep doing our thing and keep proving it time and time. And we've been proving it for years. It's so funny. So it always starts that way, but it's funny because it does. You see the impact that it's been having. More people are competing more often. People are staying leaner more often. People are talking about it more often. And it's just, you know, it takes a while but you've been one of the trendsetters on that, trailblazing that. So that's awesome to have that impact, you know? So you're seeing a lot of even, and it's not even just you in the bikini division, but bodybuilders are doing it in the bodybuilding division too now. And it's, you know, it's really taken off. So sports harder and harder these days, and you have to be, you know, you have to understand that it's going to take a lot. Okay. At what point of prep should you start feeling like you are looking stage ready? I would say the cheekbone test.
No, that's not very accurate. See, this is going to be a hard question to answer, because it's going to be different for everyone. There's no way to tell unless you see the person, you know, the individual. So if someone asks you that, there's no way. Remember we did that one podcast episode, the unanswerable questions, we get all the time, but it's not like you can actually answer them because you don't know. You'd have to know the individual. You'd have to see them and kind of know what their goals are, how quickly they can lose weight. What do they look like on stage? As you know, some people can go on stage a little softer, some a little leaner, depending on your own makeup. So yeah, that's one of those that you can't really, you know, for one person would say, oh, when I get a full six pack, and then some girls go on stage without any six pack at all. Yeah. You know what I mean? So there's no way to answer that.
Yeah. If you have, it's really, really tough. If you have a baseline, let's say, and here's the thing is the baseline changes for everyone too. Like if you're someone who's like a top bikini pro and the judges have said, you don't need any more muscle, and you know you compete at 130 and you're 140 right now, you know, and you're losing 1 pound a week, then you would know, yeah, I'm about 10 to 12 weeks out from my show. That's like the only way. Like without that information, and if you're growing from show to show and you don't have like those set numbers, it's really difficult. So that's why you want to have you know, you want to have a coach that's trained and knows the paths and knows the patterns, you know, that you're going to take. But it's based on a lot of different factors. One of them is going to be how hard you're dieting, how much you're losing per week versus how, what the estimated timeline is to your show, like weight, stage weight would be to the show. So it's difficult, but hopefully that gives you a little bit of information. You know, if you're 125 on stage and you're 135 right now, look at your loss that you're having per week divided by the date, the weeks left in the show minus peak week. And then I can kind of tell you if you're on track, at least it gives you a roundabout, but honestly, it's still difficult because if you're growing from show to show still, and you're 2 pounds heavier this time than last time, then you might be farther ahead than you think. So it's a tough question, but that'll give you like kind of a roundabout, you know, way of going about things. Next question.
Oh, this is a good one. You like this one?
Yeah, I do. Cause I fight for it quite a bit. You know, can you grow at a calorie deficit? And the simple answer to that is yes, you can grow at a calorie deficit. Is it optimal to grow at a calorie deficit? And the answer to that would be no. But you can, and that is through, and that's the problem is there's still a lot of thought process throughout there that you can't grow in a calorie deficit. And that's the thing is the body's an amazing machine. It'll do what it needs to do to survive. So just always remember this. The body is just a tool for you to survive, right? The body's just constantly trying to survive. So why do you build muscle? Well, you're building muscle because you're lifting something that is greater than you lifted before. That is a stress that your body hasn't been through before. So it says, okay, I need to prepare myself to either run longer, right? Building endurance-based muscle fibers. I need to build muscle to lift more, building, you know, muscle, like white muscle fiber size and actually increasing in size. So I can be stronger. That way, when Ashley lifts this 100 pounds that last week she only lifted 90, I could be prepared for that. So, because otherwise I'm going to break. And if I break, I die, because back in the day, you got a broken leg, good luck hunting, you know, whatever it is you're hunting, right? So that is the reason that you're building muscle. You lifted greater than before. So your body's preparing you for that. So what does that mean? The body has been through, you got to remember when we look at our history and we look at, you know, feast and famine back in the days when it was, if you lived in Colorado, you know, 1,000 years ago and it's freezing cold, you're going to have to get through that winter, right? So when we look at that, your body is in a big calorie deficit. So as you're saying, like, everyone during the winter time back then who wasn't eating the same amount of food, they're all losing muscle. None of them could build muscle that whole time. That wouldn't make any sense. How would they start hunting when it was time? Right. So just genetically, we're programmed to get through these things. So now let's look at it in our modern day. I want to lose a little bit of body fat. How do I build muscle? Well, you're still, if you have body fat available and you have the higher your body fat you have available, the easier it's going to be, because your body can take that fat that is, it is energy. Remember, all body fat is an energy bank. If you think about it, is you just storing calories in the bank? Unfortunately, yeah. A lot of you are accruing interest in the off season. But if you're just storing energy in the bank, your body can use that whenever it wants. It's harder to use that as energy, right? But it'll use that energy to get you through the day. The food that you're eating can be used. The protein that you're eating can be used to be shuttled towards the muscle and recovery. That's called nutrient partitioning. Your body is using the energy that you're eating to help repair muscle. The energy that you need from the stored energy bank, the body fat, to use it throughout the day and get you through the day. That energy is energy. Now, when you get very lean, it's going to be difficult to do that. The leaner you get, the harder it's going to be, because the body's going to resist you a little bit. At a certain point, it's going to say, hey, I don't really want to tap into this energy bank anymore. Let's just shut it down. Let's make her feel really lazy, really tired. Let's have her sleep a lot. Let's get our NEAT down and just tell her she's tired, because I don't want to get, we're running too low on energy reserves. We're having to build too much muscle. Let's slow this demand down to build muscle and to get rid of these energy reserves, because otherwise we're going to not be here. We're not going to have any energy reserves. And then we're going to have too much muscle that's inefficient for us to walk around with. Let's just shut it down, right? And that's when you run into that. So yes, you can build. Anyone with a higher level of body fat, I always recommend them building in a calorie deficit. Anyone who's pretty lean, I'm going to say, yeah, it's going to be a little bit difficult, but you could still do it. Ashley's a good example of that. She's built, you could see over the years, that she's built a good amount of muscle. Has it been slower than if she bulked? Probably a little bit slower, but the argument is, well, she didn't need to go through these huge fat loss phases, which for Ashley is a little difficult for her to lose body fat quickly.
Yeah, believe it or not. Mm-hmm.
So the exchange is still arguable that it was the best way. who knows if we would have bulked three times or whatever, that she would have had a pound more of muscle. The problem is, I don't know if Ashley would be actually have reached the burnout because she would have had to diet harder, right? Mm-hmm. So probably not with Ashley, but the argument's there. So there you go. I guess there's the long answer on that one.
Yeah. And I think too, just to kind of also put this idea out there is, you know, once you, the whole muscle maturity and like newbie gains, yeah. Argument, right? So if you're a newbie lifter, also probably not the best idea to grow in a calorie deficit, unless it's a overweight individual, you know,
I would say the same,
you know, I would say in the newbie lifter case, it might be more beneficial to take time off and maybe not try the calorie deficit growing it depending on the individual. But like you said, and I'm glad that you mentioned this, the body fat is energy, because I hear it all the time. Girls are afraid that they're going to like lose muscle, or, oh my gosh, I even though the individual might already be overweight and they lost like maybe a pound or two from the next check-in, and they're concerned like, oh my God, I'm losing muscle. And it's like, well, that person isn't stage lean. They're not like starving for energy or anything. Yeah. That is energy. Yeah. So you can feel a little more loosey goosey with it. So I'm glad you mentioned that.
Yeah. People don't think about it as what it is. You know, your body can use that whenever it needs it. It's there.
Yeah.
You know?
And also that's good too, that like in the off season, if the individual's like, you know, a little more on the overweight side, you don't need to like purposely try to put on more fat, obviously.
Yeah.
That's kind of productive.
Exactly. You're just storing more energy.
Yeah.
That's necessary. So just remember that. And then do remember, yeah, there's degrees of this. Of course, 100 calorie deficit would be a little easier to build muscle than 1,000 calorie deficit, right? So the farther you get in the deficit, mm-hmm. of course, it's going to be a little bit harder.
Yeah. Which is also the other argument of the like a long, like the kind of crash, you'd have to crash diet, you know?
Yeah.
If you're looking at 1,000 calorie deficit. And you're going to be maybe losing muscle at that point.
Exactly. That's what people don't think about too. That's a problem with arguing fitness. It's funny. I had this one guy who's like debating me on like fitness arguments somewhere. We're just at check-ins. This guy just like started going at me and I was like, dude, I can make a better argument for your side than what you're doing. There's always going to be an argument for whatever side it is. Right. So the argument for bulking is, oh, you're going to gain the most amount of muscle. But then the counter argument to that is, well, you're going to have to diet the hardest when you're going through that. And you're going to lose more muscle while dieting harder than you would if you dieted with a smaller calorie deficit for a shorter period of time. So there's always like an offset to each one, you know? Mm-hmm. And so, so that's the one for that. So that's a fun one. That could be a whole podcast on itself.
Yeah.
Okay. So this is a good one. This is probably more for you. Mm-hmm. How did you manage, and did you have, how did you manage negative thoughts, doubts, body dysmorphia between seasons?
So I'd be lying if I said I did. I actually am pretty confident and comfortable with my body in season, off season, but at the same time, I don't let it get too fluffy. You know, I always say I never want to make it look like I wasn't an athlete. Like, you know, some girls go too far in the off season and you look at them and you're like, I couldn't tell you who ever competed. Like, I don't even know if you work out. Like, I never want to be in that position. So I keep it together. I know a lot of girls deal with this though. And most of the time it's a really crappy off season is why. So it's going to be really harsh to say this, but the best advice is just keep it together in the off season a little better. That way you don't look like two different people, whether you're competing or not. That I would never want that to happen to me. I will say in 2017, the year I took off and I gained 25 pounds, I did get to the point though that I didn't even want to wear tank tops because I was so fluffy, in my opinion. And my, I guess, definition of fluffy is a little different than others because I've always been an athlete. So I always want to look the part. So anything that's not that makes me a little uncomfortable, but I never thought like I was fat and anything like that. I was just like, oh, I don't think this tank top looks the best on me. But you know, it's one of those things, just gotta keep it together, I guess.
Yeah.
It's a kind of a hard answer to that because it's a little harsh. Just keep it together a little better. That should help with it.
It always comes down to that because you're basically two different people.
Yeah.
You know? Like you know, when you see the in season and off season for some of these people, and it shouldn't really be. If you're doing fitness as a sport, you should always be fit. And it's weird. That's the weird thing to me. And that's why I always like hammer this in. And I'm kind of the like, I'm kind of like the off-season Nazi, I think. I'm like, you know, you can't go that far because the reason I'm so hard on it is that I see what happens after that. I understand that people are like, oh, I'm balanced and I'm confident in my body either way. I get that, and great for you if you're that person. What I do see is I see the after effects. I see that it's hard on your heart. I see that it's hard on your body. It's hard on your skin. And I also see that it's hard on your mind. And are you really that confident when you're looking like that? Or are you just saying that because it's the right thing to say? So from what I see, a lot of it is just people saying it's the right thing to say because it's trendy and people get a lot of likes in their photos and stuff. But the reality is that's what causes people to burn out, because they're having to diet harder and harder and harder. And then they don't feel they don't have the same confidence when they're that high up. So the weird thing that to me is when people get into fitness, they've never had a hard time. And this is what really makes it sucks for me to see it as a coach, because I see it happen all the time. People go through this fitness, like competing path. Like they start off in the gym, they fall in love with the gym. They're fit for years. They're fit for like 3 years straight. They're super fit. And then they have, you know, maybe 10, 15 pounds to lose to get into stage shape. So they're regular fit, like your walk around fitness level of what everyone I think should walk around at, you know, 15-ish pounds above stage weight, that type of thing, 10 pounds above stage weight, depending on your weight. And then they compete and they go from being able to maintain that with relative ease for years. And then they compete. And then all of a sudden, then they gain 30 pounds. Then they gain 40 pounds because they couldn't stop eating. And they kind of forget the reason that they love the gym so much. And they go into this different person. And I think that that's where a lot of this happens is I was fit for 3 years. I competed. And then after I competed, I couldn't stop eating. And now I'm up 30, 40 pounds. And now I just want to get back to that ripped girl again. I want to get back to that ripped girl again because I hate how I feel right now. I feel like I'm fat. I'm going to do another competition. I'm going to diet hard, do whatever it takes. And then boom, I gain it back again. Damn, I did it again. I want to get back to that girl because I hate how I feel, hate how I look. Right. And then you just get in this cyclical thing and then it burns people out of fitness. And I'm like, originally you were staying fit because you loved the gym and you just loved being fit. Now you're calling yourself an athlete and you're doing the farthest thing from what an athlete would do, which is be good at your sport and try to practice at your sport all the time. What happened between those two things? I'd rather you just be that girl who was fit at the gym. It's healthier for you. You were more confident that way. So where did the disconnect happen between those two things, where you were able to just live lean versus now we're chasing that last physique and then we're getting to somewhere where you've never been before you competed? What happened in the psyche there? We need to analyze that. Ask yourself, what happened between those two things? Why are you doing this to yourself? Right. So that's where I struggle with it as a coach, because I see this happen time and time and time again. And it's like, if you don't need to diet so hard, don't diet so hard, because you have this huge rebound that comes after it for a lot of people. So find the love for it. I think if you find the love for why you got into fitness, that's going to be the answer, because staying fit isn't hard. And I'm not saying staying stage lean. That's crazy. I think staying stage lean like Ashley is a little bit genetic based too.
Stay stage lean that. Yeah. Like I'm not stage lean right now.
Yeah. Five-ish, six-ish pounds. Okay, that's okay. For her. It's, you know, she's 50, I would say 50% leaner than most people, yes, as her target. That's fair. But she's also a hard loser. She's a hard, yes, loser. So,
and but I can, like, once it's off though, I can maintain, like, yeah, that's my advantage. And I know that about myself. It's like, it's hard for me to lose the weight, but once I'm there, oh, I can be there for, yeah, a long time. My body doesn't deteriorate. I feel fine. So yeah.
Yeah. So there you go. So, so just find that. I think that's the important thing, is finding that balance. So yeah. So I guess I feel like we're always talking about that, but it's the most important thing, and it's the most overlooked thing. Everyone wants a coach when it comes time to get ready for a show. Almost everyone wants to leave the coach as soon as the show is done. And that's when the most important things happen. And that's where you set yourself up for success or failure. That's where you set yourself up for the start of the journey. And whether you start your journey with 8 weeks to go or you start your journey with 20 weeks to go, that's the difference between the long-term success and the short-term success every time. So, all right. How do you handle it when you are 100% on your plan and your weight just does not go down? Me?
Oh, yeah, you want
you?
Me to go?
Go for it.
Oh,
yeah.
So listen, there is such thing as normal human fluctuation. You, even if you're 100% on your diet, 100% on your training, it's never going to just be such a predictable, like, oh, okay, I'm going down by a pound exactly this week and then this week and this week. It's not going to work like that. Some weeks you're not going to see any progress on the scale, but you're going to say, hey, no, but I swear I look leaner. And I, you know, I have that too. I'll check in one day and I'm like, nah, whatever this is saying, whatever the scale says, whatever the measurements are, I swear I look leaner. And sometimes, you know, it's like a mental game. You just got to keep pushing, but, you know, realize that there's factors that will affect that, such as digestion. Is your digestion like regular, or are you holding some in there? Even like, even a can of energy drink that could be like 1 pound if you didn't pee it out. Like, let's say you drank it and then you checked and you didn't pee it all out. Maybe you ate later in the day, the previous day before you weighed yourself. Okay. Your body's still digesting. Maybe you ate something that was harder to digest. Maybe just hormones, maybe sleep. You know, there's so many factors. As long as you know that you gave 100%, it should be eventually coming down. And, you know, it can definitely play with your mind though. And I'm victim of that as well. I'll be like, I don't understand why things are the same when I put so much effort. But it's like, you have a few of those weeks and then you have like one random week where you just like drop like a few pounds and you look so much tighter already. And you're just like, where did this come from? It's just, you know, it's how it is.
Yeah. It's never going to be linear. So just understand that you're never going to have just this pure linear chart of I lost 1.5 pounds. I lost 1.5 pounds. I lost 1.5. It just doesn't really work that way. You can, you know, if you look back, one of the best things I loved watching as a trainer growing up was there was a show in the early 2000s called The Biggest Loser TV show. And I've talked about it before, but if you guys can watch those episodes, old episodes, it's pretty mind-blowing to see what an extreme calorie deficit does on an extremely obese person. But it's a lot of things that you can look at and kind of apply to yourself, you know? So these people would be basically, I've talked about it before, but they're basically at fat camp is basically what it was. It's like an adult fat camp. They had like two teams of different trainers, three teams of different trainers. They all had to lose like 100+ pounds. And some of them were like 200 pounds overweight. They were very obese and they would basically be at fat camp. They'd be very controlled setting of low calories, tons of cardio, tons of movement throughout the day, team workouts, all this stuff. And you'd see 1 week they'd lose like, these are crazy numbers because they were very obese. So it'd be like 15 pounds. Sometimes there was once I saw 17 pounds in a week, just crazy weight. And then that same person would do the same exact thing the next week and lose nothing, like a zero on the chart. Like, how does that make any sense? You know, like I was like, expecting this. Oh, so they lost 17 popcorn watching it. They're like, oh, they lost 17 pounds. This person's going to lose another 15 pounds this week. Zero.
Yeah. Right?
Sometimes gain weight. It's crazy. How is that even possible? There's not even enough calories. It doesn't even make sense. Right. So if that's happening on that, at that scale, of course it could happen on your 1 pound scale. Right. Of course it could happen. But the key is take your measurements. Remember, it's going to be, you know, at this level, it's going to not be huge progress. It's going to be like micro progress throughout the weeks. Sometimes when you're not making progress, you're still making progress. You know, there's other gains to be had besides just fat loss. There's muscle gains you could be having. You could be having a metabolism gain that week where you ate a little bit more that week and your metabolism's a little bit fired up. Your hormones, you could have a hormone gain that week where, you know, you had more food, your hormone gain, right? You're getting your hormones back to full speed after a show. Maybe you did something and reset and got some hormone gains throughout the week because you raised your fats this week and you've been, you know, your body was hurting a little bit. All of a sudden, because you did that, your period started back up and you're having that happen, right? Or maybe it is your period that week. So just
or inflammation too. Like if you trained a body, like let's say you had a crazy leg day.
Yeah.
And you notice the next day you're like, oh my gosh, my legs are so swollen and sore. Yeah. That's your body like trying to repair itself. So yeah,
I had that happen sometimes too, where someone will check in. Usually the day before their check-in was, let's say it's a Sunday and they just don't work out on Sundays. Uh-huh. And then they worked a hard leg day on a Sunday that week for some reason, cause they missed it earlier that week. And then they're up 3 pounds. I'm like, yeah.
Yeah.
You're having water cause you worked out really hard. So
I don't know if you remember, but last year before the Mile High, I was like in a little bit of a panic cause I had a really crazy leg day with Sam, like a few days, like before my check-in. And then I checked in and you could tell my legs were so like swollen. Like it wasn't, I was like freaking out. I'm like, oh my gosh. My weight went up. My legs were just so swollen. And like, you could visibly see like, whoa, something looks a little different here. It's like my legs got like a lot softer, but yeah, I knew that was because of inflammation. Cause I was like so sore and I was just like pushing it so hard in the gym. So that can definitely happen too. That can definitely happen to you. So, you know, that's obviously a good thing in the long run. Cause you're going to make progress, but temporarily you might see that number go up.
Yeah. And just understand, you know, if that's something that's happening for a long period of time, you might need to change things up. Maybe you've been dieting for too hard for too long. And the body is going through that thing that we talked about where it said, hey, shut it down. And you had to go through a period of kind of resetting the metabolism and getting your body a little bit of a break. You know, sometimes usually a month break where you're just increasing calories slowly and not gaining any body fat and bringing down cardio, whatever, puts you at a good spot to start it up again. You know, some people need longer than that, but You know, it's just case by case dependent. Just pay attention to the signs. And then if in the worst case scenario, let's say you've already done all that, you know, also you could check your hormones, you know, check to see where everything's at. Maybe there's something that's a little off. And these days we can pretty much find, we can eventually find the issue if there is a major issue. Also, and I hate to say this, more times than not, than people are not losing weight almost every time is because they're eating more calories than they think they are. That is probably 90, I would say a high 90%. It's usually that simple. Just you're eating more than you think you are. You
it's know, never less, really.
It's really, it's like so many of
yeah,
the times.
Yeah, and all the, some of the, yeah, little empty calories too. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, let me put this creamer in my coffee or let me use this ketchup, the not the sugar-free kind, just regular ketchup. Like things, stupid calories, basically.
Yeah. The in-betweens. Stupid man. Calories. The in-betweens, the stupid calories. It's
the gummy vitamins.
It's rare. They get you for five each time. It's rarely something different than that. It's rarely something different than that, you know? Yeah. So overestimating everyone, no one ever doesn't think they're being a good student. That's the problem. Everyone always thinks they're killing it on their diet. And the problem is like when you really break it down, a lot of you are. I'm not going to say a lot of you aren't, but the ones that aren't losing weight, when they start really looking at it, you're like, oh yeah, I've been eating like 400 calories more than I thought I was. You know, I had one guy one time and it was a guy and he was eating so much rice.
Let me guess. He got the measurements mixed up.
He was cooking. Yeah. I was doing like one cup for him. 'Cause it was easy for him. So I was doing like one cup of cooked rice, but he was doing one cup of dry rice.
Oh,
that's so much freaking rice. Yeah. Three times a day. And I'm like, I don't know why you're not leaning out. Like we went to half a cup of rice, like all this stuff. Right. And then he's like, hey, it was like weeks in. He's like, is this supposed to be cooked? It says cooked on it. He's like, is this supposed to be cooked? I'm like, dude, it says cooked. It said cooked the entire time. How did you ever? I'm like, yeah, dude, it says cooked. Like,
whoopsie.
Yeah. He was eating. It was like, you know, it's like 2.5 times the amount, like that type. So it's usually something. So just analyze everything. Don't eat anything that's not on your menu plan for a week. Like absolutely nothing besides what's on your menu plan for a week. And then see if progress happens. And then, you know, or at least you have a good idea that that's probably the problem. It's rarely more complicated than that, guys. It really is. So, Okay, next question.
This is a good question. I like this one. You're going to answer it. What purpose does depleting down to fill back up serve on peak week and or throughout a prep? I like that. That's a great question.
Yeah, it's a tough question because it's okay. I get it.
I was trying to look at the questions.
Yeah, it's okay. It's a tough question because there's a lot
on the...
It's there's
on
a
YouTube.
Oh, okay, cool.
Sorry.
There's a lot of theories in bodybuilding that aren't necessarily proven. But what I've found over my years, you got to remember, I've worked in nutrition stores since I was 16, which is crazy because I'm an old man. So 16 years old, I started working in nutrition stores. What I've seen over the years, you know, I'm 41 now. So what I've seen over the years is that bodybuilders tend to figure out things correctly more often than like scientists figured out, because the scientists will kind of make fun of them and be like, oh, that's not going to work. And then the body's like, I don't know. It works. That it looks like it works. And a lot of times it's bro science. And then it becomes real science, like years down the road, like 10 years down the road. I'm like, dang, these guys. And then the scientists figured out, and I'm like, man, these guys figured it out 10 years ago when everyone thought it was like stupid. And then there was like, oh, that was right. You know? So a lot of this is going to be theory. And so one of the things with this is it's always going to be basically theory if it's going to work. So what is the reason for depleting down? Use this one. What is the reason for depleting down glycogen when you're just going to put it back in? Why would I do that? Why would I go through that unnecessary suffering of doing that? Now, this is an old bodybuilding technique. And there's a reason for it. And so the reason that the bodybuilders do it is they call it a super compensation of glycogen upload, right? So when we talk about the body, there's a lot of like super overcompensation, where your body will overcompensate greater to the point it was before because of a temporary stimulus or whatever, right? So you know, this is one of them. We talk about metabolism, we talk about all these different things. We rarely talk about glucose metabolism. So this has to do with glucose metabolism. How can I, and so bodybuilders are basically saying, how can I suck as much glucose into the muscle cell as possible, right? So they've tried all these different things for years and years and years. One thing that's been consistent is depleting someone down and then giving them carbs again is going to is going to somehow, some way, get them to fill up with more glucose than before, making them rounder and fuller, right? So what is causing that? So what you're doing is you're stripping your body of the glycogen. You're basically sending a signal to the body that it needs to uptake more glycogen because it's depleted. You do this for a short period of time, and there's an actual enzyme called a glucose synthase enzyme or glycogen synthase enzyme, which basically goes off on a higher amount. When that higher amount is triggered, it's basically telling your body, hey, I need to absorb more glucose than before because I'm starved of glucose. And so when this guy gives me glucose, I'm going to suck it in my muscle, right? The theory is because glycogen will store water with it, so it'll in theory, 2.7 grams of water for every gram of glucose is sucked into a muscle cell. If I can have this super compensation of being depleted to suck in glycogen into my muscle cell, I will also suck in more water than normal. So I'll have this round, full, glycogen-filled muscle greater than before for a temporary period of time, thus doing it at the end of peak week and looking fuller the day of the show. But that also solves my problem of having any subcutaneous water that might be there under the skin. I can pull it into the cell for a temporary amount of time, giving me a drier look, right? So that is, in short, why you deplete down and why you upload carbs. Is it the best method? There's always a con with a pro. Depends on the person. If someone is very full and they don't need to take that risk, why do it? Why would you do that if they're already full? They don't need that extra, right? Because the other thing you have to take into consideration is if you're giving someone a lot of food volume at the end, what's going to happen to their waistline? Well, they're going to pay for it there. So different people, different things. You would never take someone who's super, super full and give them this crazy depletion workout and then fill them out like crazy and have them be fuller when they're already the biggest bikini competitor on stage. And now we lost a little bit of their lines on their waistline because they paid for it there. So there's no go-to method that's going to work for everyone. The depletion method, everyone saw me this weekend. I was posting this stupid thing about the secret sauce. It's just like, it's a funny thing. So the secret sauce thing is basically, I'm not going to tell you what it is because it's too fun.
It's a secret.
It's a secret sauce.
Duh.
What are we doing with Kimber? I did this exact method where we deplete her down, we fill her up, right? Because she's tall. She's got a lot of muscle per square inch that needs to fill out. So we did this. We did this exact type of thing. And the secret sauce was a low volume, high sugar way of doing this. In theory, I was timing the, I was playing also with her glucose, like her insulin sensitivity, and giving her a high glycemic index carbohydrate primarily on its own to spike insulin to drive the carbs to the muscle cell while she's in a depleted state, trying to give her a fuller, rounder look. Did it work? I don't know. It worked. She looked the best she's ever looked. I can't say it was just that. I can't say it would have been a completely different effect if we used the approach we used last year, which was a consistent load and then a little bit harder load at the end. Sometimes I've even front-loaded her. The thing about Kimber, she's got the craziest waistline.
It doesn't matter if her waistline pays for it, because if it does, it doesn't matter.
Exactly, right? Yeah, because it's like, even if she gained an inch on her waist, it might even help her. Who knows? Yeah. You know, it's such a small waistline. So yeah, I can get away with that with her. You know, if you were working with someone like Issa and her crazy waist, yeah, throw a bunch of food at her. Her waist is so small. Ashley's got a small waist too. So like, why would I, you know, so there's just different scenarios for different competitors, and you have to make that decision based on their structure, their genetics, their how they respond with how they load carbs. Ashley's not the best like carb loader. It's not this huge impact on her look if she has 500 carbs, which, you know, we haven't done, but if she has 500 carbs or like 100 carbs,
I did 400 in Japan.
Yeah.
With it, mochi.
It's not a huge difference on her look. She looks relatively full, and she looks somewhat, when she's a little bit flat, she actually looks pretty good sometimes because she shows her lines a little bit better. So what are we going for in that scenario, that day? It kind of depends too on like, what is the show? Is it going to be a bunch of hard girls at that show? Is it going to be softer girls at the show that are really big? There's also that factor into it too. So this sport is played at a very high level, at the highest level. It's really, really difficult. There's no room for error. There's no margin of error. There's girls at the last show this last weekend, I could see were way better than the placing that they had, but they're posing wrong. Their load is wrong. They're doing the same type of carb load that you would do for someone who shouldn't do that. Like there's everyone's going to be a different situation. That's why you see the same guys doing the same thing every year after year, be having the same success. It is very, very complicated at the highest level. And this is one of those things. Peak week is definitely one of them.
Good stuff. So before we end, I think we should answer some of these awesome questions we got here in our, can we do this one?
Yeah, there you go.
So I'm reading your guys' comments and questions here. So we'll just finish off this episode quickly with some of these. So Jackie, she's my client actually. Hi, Jackie.
Hey, Jackie.
So she said, what is the physique difference between the regional, national, and pro shows? And just hard, harder, hardest, or good, better, best. Yeah. that's my best answer for you, because it's ideally the criteria is the same. It's just the level of talent that shows up. So obviously you're not going to get pro level talent at just a regular national show, or I should say national qualifying show. But the actual criteria is the same. It's just who you're going against.
Yeah.
You know,
the pool of people,
yes,
is significantly different.
Definitely.
So local level show, there might be a couple girls there that have a pro look or pro potential or even a pro structure. And then national show, it's like 50% of those girls look like they could potentially go pro eventually, but really like 10, 15% of them maybe could go pro quickly. And their structures support it. And then the pro level, you got to remember, you've weeded through all those girls already. Everyone there on the stage is pro level. Everyone there has pro genetics, pro structure. And then you're picking the best of the best of those ones now. And it just gets harder and harder and harder as you work up, and it becomes a lot different. But there's, I think people really, and this is unfair to the judges, you know, they'll say, oh, well, the judges here like a softer physique and whoever likes a hard physique and they like bodybuilder girls or whatever, right? And that's never really the case for the judges. Some judges are like a little bit of a harder girl, but it's not, usually you don't see a significant difference judge to judge. It might be a tiny difference, and only someone with a really, really trained eye can even see that, but it's not significant. And it should, you know, of course, it's going to be slight varying between person to person. But the problem is like, it's just the area and who showed up that day of the show. You know, if a bunch of soft girls showed up and then a soft girl wins, and the judges, they're like, oh, he likes soft girls. And a bunch of hard girls show up and a hard girl wins, they're like, oh, that judge likes hard girls. And it's not really the case. It's like, they have to pick the best of who they have the option of picking.
Yeah, even if the winner doesn't necessarily fit the criteria perfectly, it's the best out of the group. So, you know.
Yeah, yeah, what are you going to do, you know?
Yeah, which I guess, you know what, we should highlight this one, because that kind of answers this one. I've noticed a lot of pro bikini competitors have quite large shoulders, especially masters. How big do we need to get? That's another example. It's not ideal. The judges aren't saying, yeah, we want that. They're probably just picking who's showing up. Yeah. And I can say, if you look at, I don't know, the top Olympians, do they have humongous shoulders? I would say no. I don't think I do. I mean, I wish I did. But I wouldn't call anyone in the top even 10 of Olympia like huge. Like, no. So I also would say that you're probably looking at photos, and everyone looks bigger in photos and videos, unless you're standing next to one. But to answer the question, to wrap that up, it's not ideal. It's not preferred, but they got to choose someone. And, you know, and she didn't even say these were the winning girls. It just said, yeah. I noticed a lot of pro bikini competitors have quite large shoulders. Well, if, you know, I would ask how their placings are, and if their feedback is what's the judge's feedback? It's probably like, oh, you need to tone down those shoulders if you really think they're that big. But again, it could just appear big on photo and video until you stand next to them. You might be like, oh, wait a minute. Cause that always happens. Everyone thinks I'm bigger until they see me in real life at an expo. They're like, oh my gosh, yeah, you're so much smaller. And I thought, no one has ever came up to me and was like, whoa, you're so much bigger than what I thought.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's always, I'm smaller than what they think. So.
Yeah. I actually really love when that happens. I don't think the girls ever, they always mean it in a nice way, but I think it's a moment of relief for them.
Yeah.
Is what,
no,
it is.
I like, yeah, that. I don't want to be big.
Yeah. I think they see you and they're like, oh, thank God. I thought I would never be able to look like you. But yeah, I think if I worked really hard, this is achievable. I think, yeah, I could achieve maybe not the same look, structure, right, but muscle bellies, but the amount of muscle you have, I could do that if, yeah, I worked really hard. And that's a great, mm-hmm, that's a great thing to hear. Yeah, because it seems so unachievable, you know.
Right.
I look at Rami and I'm like, yeah, I can't get that big. I'm not gonna get that big. So when a girl sees you, I think it's awesome. And I also, one of the things I'll mention too is you're specifically mentioning masters competitors.
Oh yeah.
I will say it probably has a lot to do with the skin texture too.
Oh yes.
Because when you have a master's competitor, they might be lifting for 30 years, you know? And when a master's competitor who's been lifting for 30 years, or even 15 years has, and they have a little bit thinner skin and you're seeing more grain to the muscle, more detail to the muscle, you know, you'll see the master's competitors that are, you know, I would say, honestly, you don't even see a lot of it till like 45 plus even. A lot of them just don't have that, but you'll get that a little bit thinner skin. You'll get that grainier muscle, that more detail, and it looks bigger, even though they're not bigger. If you took Ashley's muscle and you just got rid of all the whatever out of her skin and it's just skin on muscle, she would look bigger because you'd see all the detail, look like an anatomy chart type of thing, mm-hmm. but it's not necessarily bigger. It's just skin texture on them. So that would be basically it. And you know, I'll go into one more. Why not?
Did you scroll all the way down? We got new comments too. We got to check those out. Hold on.
This
hold
is
on.
Fun. All right. Let's you're still see. Up hold for on. It. I'll
yeah. Go. We'll just make them quick though.
Okay. There's this. Actually, it's quick. There's this one here I'm going to go into. Oh, wait. That's not the one. I thought that was one. Sorry. You see any? Oh, here's the one. That was the one I was talking about. Okay. Alex said, how much does your image as a coach impact whether a client competes or not, especially if you are a newer coach without any higher potential clients yet? So one,
Adam has to behave himself.
Yes. Yes.
Adam is that the question? Adam has to behave yes. himself because he coaches me.
Yes. Yes, exactly. I'm gonna get in trouble here. Yeah. What I'll say is this, it depends on the athlete and what they're doing and what they want out of this. Okay. I take what I, okay. I will say this for a pro, I'm much different on a pro level than I am on an amateur level. If you're a pro, I'm just going to put it out there as it is, like this really is, you know, it's a professional sport and it needs to be treated as a professional sport. You're not going to climb the ranks as a professional if you're constantly chasing your last physique, if you're transforming into shows. There is just no room for it. If you see pros transforming into shows after show after show, you're going to see, one, you're going to see huge fluctuations in their placements, and two, you're going to see them start losing ground, and girls who are not fluctuating and not going through transformations show after show after show start passing them. They're going to start losing traction, and it happens time and time again. As a professional in any sport, it is your job as a professional to practice that sport, to be the best you can at that sport, or don't play the professional sport. It's a professional sport with huge, awesome lives at the end of it, at the end of that rainbow. So, you know, I do treat pros a little different. I'm not going to be investing my time with pros who are not giving me their all. Sorry. It's just not, that's not what we need to be doing as a professional athlete in any sport, including ours. You give your all to be the best you can, or you come back when it's time for you to do that, because you're not going to climb the ranks in this market with how it is these days, with how good the girls are, by doing anything less than giving your all as a professional. Now, as an amateur, it depends on the client's goal. If a client comes to me and says, hey, Adam, I just want to lose this 50 pounds. I want to feel confident in my body again and get on stage, and they have 15 more pounds to go, but they're feeling great, I'm not going to tell them not to get on stage. Absolutely. You go there, you celebrate it, you post your pictures. Congratulations. It makes me feel good. I love that stuff. But I'm not doing that on the pro level, guys. I'm not doing that on the pro level. I'm not going to get spanked on the pro level because someone had 15 more pounds to go. I'm going to tell them, hey, you're not ready yet. Sorry, we shouldn't have went so hard in the offseason, right? You should have went so hard in the offseason. So, but as an amateur, absolutely. There's no reason that you should be telling all your amateurs have to look like a pro when they're on stage. You should be honest with your amateurs, though, and tell them, hey, yeah, you can. And I tell my amateurs this all the time, because I found in the long run, it's better for me to be brutally honest than for them to find out themselves. But they're going to find out for themselves either way. So I'll tell them, they'll say, do you think I'm going to be ready for the show? Do you think I'm ready? And I'll be like, hey, look, you still have this to work on, this to work on. You know, you're not going to win the overall at this show, but you might be top five. I think that you're competitive to be top five. If you're cool with that, let's do it, you know, but understand you have more to go. You're not going to be there to slay the show. And then some girls will come to me and say, hey, I want to be a pro. I don't want to get on stage until I'm going to win the overall. And I'm like, all right, let's shoot for that. You know, and they're like, hey, should I compete yet or should I wait? And I'm telling them, hey, you should wait because you're not there to win, do what you want to do yet. So it's different based on the person. And I'm not going to worry about how it impacts me personally, unless it's like a pro level thing where all eyes are on it type of thing. But, you know, and that's the agreement that you have between the pro. Like the pro's coming to you and they're saying, hey, Adam, I want your best. You give me your best. And I say, hey, pro, I'm going to give you my best. I don't, hey, pro. I'm going to give you my best. or else I'm not going to take you on because I don't find it worth it to me to give you my best effort. Cause it takes a lot of effort, right? And that's why I don't work with that many pros. Cause it's a lot of time and effort, you know? And then my agreement to that pro is, okay, me giving you my best, you need to give me your best because I want this just as bad or maybe more than you. Okay. I want to win through you, but also I want to win. And that's at least you can say I'm selfish and that's fine. I don't care, but that's great to have a coach that's selfish that wants to win even more than you or maybe as much as you, right? And I should never want it more than the athlete wants it themselves. If there's ever a point where I want it, if I want them to stick to their menu plan more than they want to themselves, we've gone in the wrong direction. It shouldn't even be a question of that. So there you go. That's the differences between the levels of this. And it's hard to hear that if you're a pro going through one of these things, but hey, you're not good. It's just the way it is. You know, no matter how good your genetics are, you're not gonna be able to offset that these days. When you have an Ashley being 100%, when you have, you know, these girls who just don't go off menu plan, you see them, you see these like Issas and whatnot. They're just machines. You think you're gonna pass a machine like that, giving halfway effort half the time? It's not gonna happen, you know?
Machine, they call me AK-47, you know?
You are Machine Gun Ashley.
That's my nickname in track.
Was it Machine Gun Ashley?
No, AK-47.
Yeah. So with that, guys, I guess we're gonna do another one. These are really fun.
Yeah. So we had more questions.
Oh, you want to go into them?
I was gonna say for part two.
Okay. I can save these live ones.
Yes, save them. You guys asked so many good questions that we just couldn't get them all in this episode. But if you're not, because we will be back next week, hopefully on time. Adam had a flat tire today. So I know. Hopefully on time next week. But thank you guys for watching. Anything else you'd like to say?
I do want to say something.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
You're so excited. I want to say, okay, Stephanie, remember, I posted her on my Instagram. Remember the girl that I said, didn't get on stage at the Arnold because she was doing her makeup, got caught in traffic. You remember her? Everyone talked about it. Everyone was like, I talked about it in the episode. I never wanted to say who it was. And then I told, because I didn't want to embarrass her or anything, you know? Because that's like, you know, that sucks to be that girl. But she called me Saturday night after her show, after we're on our way home. And she's like, it was the best phone call. She's like, Adam, I'm like, what? She's like, I won it. I won everything. And I was like, what do you mean you won everything? So what she did was she said, I'm not done with this. I'm not going to waste this body. I'm going to get on stage again. So she stuck to it. A lot of girls would have just thrown out their hands up, like, I'm done with it. This sucks. You know, I lost all this money. I went to the Arnold. I didn't even get to compete. She's like, I won everything. I've never won anything before. And I'm so happy. She won the overall and she won best in show, which means she fit the criteria more than any other division. So she won.
I didn't know that was a thing.
And some shows will have it once in a while. It's like the overall. It's like basically the overall between all the competitors, whoever fits their criteria of their division best. So she won the overall and I wanted to give her a shout out for not quitting.
Shout out.
Yeah. As I posted her on my Instagram, she's a hardest worker in the room. Well, you know, and so, she crushed it. So half of her. And then we also had Marion in Vegas. She won the overall too.
Woo!
I got two overalls and a third this book. Boom.
Congrats,
yeah.
Ladies, go Team Leaf Physique. Woo, woo.
Yeah. I was so happy. And then, and Sam got a wellness overall too. The same show as Stephanie. So it was a good weekend. I like, you know, when I feel like I'm on, I love it when I feel like I'm on.
He's on. Right, yeah. Watch out, everyone. Adam is on.
I've restructured everything, my life to be like super, super on right now. And as soon as I move next door, which is like a couple houses down, I'll have even more time to give to this. So I'm like super, super, I just can't wait to this freaking season. Like the season started now, I guess. I should say.
Oh, goodness.
I got to get Ashley on stage. I'm getting the first time I've been antsy for you to get on stage.
I know. It's hard for me not to compete, you know, but hey.
Yeah.
I'm batteries recharged. I'm just about ready.
So
just about ready to step on stage.
Let's do this. All right, guys. So thank you so much for the questions. We will talk to you next week.